G'day everyone. Proud to say Bar Karate is brought to you by Radix Nutrition, makers of the most technically comprehensive nutrition products that have ever existed. Unlock your potential with Radix. G'day listeners, welcome to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. My name's Jordan Spencer and it's that time of the week where we get to hang out with some really cool sailors. But of course I have to share the mic with my two idiot mates. First off, Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
Hola.
Happy Easter, everyone. Yeah, yeah. Hope you're all out having a good time, as I'm sure you are. Our good mate Bicey down there, he's down at Port Elliot, I believe, having a bit of fun. Forgets to bring his cables for his computers, but that's how life is.
Don't burn him. Don't burn him. Let's bring
Why
him
not?
In so I can mount a defense.
He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr.
Mr. Nick Boss?
Well, first of all, apologies, men, for getting the cables. to have, you know, the dulcet tones. You know, and a voice that would make a wolverine purr as well as it does when we have the mic and the magic box, as we call it. So I'm coming to you live from let's call it Vodafone and some earbuds, but let's just roll with that. And also apologies for no episode last week. It just you know, just the universes just collided at different times, and it was just a bit too bloody hard. And you know, where were we? You're in NZ,
yep.
Jordan. I was in the Caribbean. BP, you're in Portugal. So bloody hard to do. And also apologies for making the listeners this week listen through an interview without me being involved. So,
It's a nightmare.
Take your, absolute nightmare. How have I gone, though? I mean, I've missed a few along the way just due to kind of last minute issues or timings or family, and I was just jotting down some of the ones I've missed. Nico, episode 100. Slingers, Sailor of the just got inducted into the Australian Hall of Fame, and this week, like an absolute cracker. He's a absolute gem on the race course. True gentleman, blah blah blah, and we'll go into the intro with that later. But yeah, I've had an absolute shocker, the ones that just don't happen for me. So yeah. Believe me, it's not much fun. Before we go further though, I after my time in the Caribbean, we'll chat about it soon, the Caribbean, but just a bit of a shout out to all my teammates. And I told them this at our final debrief on the mighty Maximus sailing at the St. Bart's Bucket, but I'm going to dedicate this show to those guys, the team on Maximus. They're all 46 of them, mind you.
46. That's two full football teams.
Oh, mate,
not bad.
BP, you know me, right? We grew up listening to the 12th man. We're in for a bit of a kiss, bit of a cuddle, bit of a lick, bit of a dry rope, whatever it is. Mate, we're enough Americans on board. I'm high-fiving, fist pumping, all sorts of stuff going on.
Did you walk up to the Seppos and say, "Listen, we've forgiven you. We have forgiven you."
Seppos. We don't use that term anymore, and we don't take the piss out of the guys that sail catamarans anymore. So, but I've got to say, but what an absolute unbelievable event! We'll talk about it in hot time. But
do that.
Mind blown. But I just want to give you one little story. And this is kind of big boat stuff, what we're talking about here. And when I say big boat, the Maximus 59 metre. Monday, so the regatta finishes Sunday, 3 days sailing the bucket. Regatta finishes Sunday. Everyone's moving out Monday. She's chock-a-block. Everyone trying to get out. All ferries cancelled.
Yep, nice.
So all ferries cancelled. And what on earth do I do? I'm catching a flight from St. Martin at 2:30 p.m. It's now 10 a.m. and I have to get to St. Martin. And everyone's in a bit of a scurry, and this guy Connor actually says to me, Connor, hey, Bicey, just go with those guys. So I jump in this little jimny. We go to the airport. On the way, the guy who's driving, he's on his phone, calls a helicopter company. Hey, we need to get these guys to St. Martin. They've got some flights to catch. We walk in. We do all the stuff you need to do, passports, all that sort of stuff. It comes time to pay. And it wasn't super substantial. And here I am. I've got no coverage on my phone, got no phone data. And I'm trying to transfer some money from my debit account into the credit account because they take credit cards. Just doesn't happen for me. And this lady who was with us says, oh, I can pay for you. We'll just sort it out later. And I'm so thankful. Made it happen. So, by the way, I forget your name, but if you're listening, can you send me your details?
Nice. And then on your board, the helicopter to your destination.
Anyway, and admittedly, I haven't done the chopper before, and it was pretty cool.
It was very cool.
Super cool stuff.
It's very cool.
It was like 20 miles to get to St. Martin, so it wasn't a major, but just running into everyone, and it was a massive flurry at the airport at St. Bart, then at St. Martin, because everyone's trying to get on all these other flights and stuff. But, man, that's when you see some serious fever going on. So, anyway, that was we'll talk about the results and all those sorts of things, but big shout-out to the Maximus team. Made me feel pretty much at home. Had a fantastic time spent. A maximum of 8 hours on the island in 8 days.
Oh, wow. Too much fun.
One, I was staying on the boat, and two, you know, you don't do things in halves on super yachts. Like, everything takes a day.
Yep.
Like, oh, let's just take the main. Right, yeah. We need 38 people, and it will take us a day to do it. So, anyway, cool stuff. So, results coming in, and anyway, hope you blokes had a good week or two.
Well, we're near as exciting as that, but I can tell you what, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, very cool.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right, we'll move on, boys. Before we bring in our special guest, it has been a bit of a tough week. It's the week of death, I'm afraid. Obviously, it's the anniversary of the passing of Fish during the ocean race. Australian Sailing also lost a former president, Andrew Plimpton, AM, who passed away on 24th of March. Long battle with cancer, so commiserations to Andrew's family. Our good mate Luigi Maffioli lost his father this week as well. Gottfriedi Maffioli, the rope manufacturers, we've got very close to Luigi over the years, and he's a lovely man, and I never got to meet his dad, but again, condolences to the Maffioli family for there.
And fortunately, I was lucky enough to shake Mr. Maffioli's hand when I was in visiting Luigi and Rosella in the factory a few years ago, and yeah, condolences there.
Yep.
But go on.
And another one that was really another very painful one, obviously, the loss of Gortier Sargent. So Gortier died of a heart attack this week. He's the lead.
This is just quite astounding, really, isn't it? This was just sudden and
unexpected. Couldn't believe it. Lead sail designer for North Sails, and just a great bloke to hang out with. And yeah, geez, they hit home, didn't they? Of course.
Well, I'll just talk about Palermo quickly. And I'd been fortunate enough to be included in a bit of a group chat going on about Palermo and what he has done, what he's achieved, and everyone sending their condolences in. He's one of those guys that, you know, everyone liked. He did a fantastic job at the administration point of view, not to mention a bloody cracking of yachty as well. But it was interesting in this group that's going around, and a lot of the listeners would be part of this as well. But you know how nice he was and all this stuff and all these good stories. But now we're starting to get some really in-depth stories. which is cool. And that's Plimo all over. Fortunate enough to meet him a couple of times and got some really good mates who are, you know, besties with him. say condolences. And just from a personal point of view, Gaudier, oh, holy shit, that blew my mind when I heard what was going on. Having, you know, almost Gaudier walked into, and I saw, I think it was Moose put a post out or a bit of a comment on one of the Facebook things, you know, he walked in as a fresh-faced French kid in NZ 25 years ago into North Sales. And he's basically, he's now Gaudier went through and he ran the 3L loft, which turned into the 3I loft in the Nimmin, which of which myself and Nathan Quirk, shout out to Nath, hope you're doing all right, mate. But we went and visited Gaudier, stayed with him, spent time with him over there and been involved in many campaigns that he was part of. And yeah, devastating. And I mean, not sure what there is to learn, but because he was one of the guys that lived at the, what we'd call it, the most natural life.
Yep.
He wasn't a boozer. He was a fitness guy. He loved life and he was super smart. And there's a couple of projects going on, which he's going to be sorely missed with, none more so than, of course, a Lingy Red Bull. So shout out to everyone.
And anyway, it's been a tough week for a lot of people around the sailing world. So, but now we can switch to a positive one because, of course, our guest this week is a lot of fun. He's from the Virgin Islands, US Virgin Islands. He's a multiple world match racing champion, winner of the Bermuda Cup. He was part of Boston College and their match racing team and team racing and all that stuff. And currently he is the skipper of Team USA and Sail GP. His name is Taylor Canfield. G'day, Taylor. Good to see you, mate.
Yeah, good to be seen. back to the motherland after 28 hours of travel. So just trying to keep the eyes open and... Here we are. Thanks for having me.
Here you are with us. I'm pretty sure you'll fall asleep in the next 5 minutes, so we'll just talk amongst ourselves, eh?
I'll work on that. Staying awake. Keep me entertained.
Like 28 hours of travel is pretty standard for any trip from Oz, you know, like in, when the Northern Hemispheres have to come south, you know, like it's pretty funny. But you're Virgin Islands. Is that where you're back home? Is that where you are?
I don't know how you guys do it, first of all. I wouldn't have that in me.
No,
you
know, she's an
opposite of the racing.
It's kind of like the attraction of getting to where you got to get to because you know what's at the other end. And whereas you guys are coming home from something that's the attraction.
Yeah, I like that. I grew up in the Virgin Islands, but currently living in Newport, Rhode Island.
Lovely. Yeah. Never been there. No, only about 50 times.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. and probably another 50 to come in the near future.
She's a great spot. So that's why you got the heater on, mate. I was wondering why you're jabbering away about putting the heater on. So she gets a bit cool.
No heat needed in the islands, that's for sure.
Hey mate, you've just flown home from Sail GP in Christchurch, one of the most extreme Sail GP events, I think. Like you guys are in. So I think we have to start with Sail GP. We'll talk about how you got into sailing a bit later on, but because just so much happening with Sail GP. First off, congratulations. Was that a lot of wheeling and dealing in the background to get into the Team USA team? Because I'm assuming it's part of your Stars and Stripes sort of program that has taken in over the ownership. Is that correct?
Yeah, thank you. I feel like it's been a long time coming, but Mike Buckley and I have kind of been on this path of, just creating, the next American syndicate for, the last couple of years now. And we started in trying to put this America's Cup team together, Stars and Stripes, as you mentioned, and, unfortunately built half of AC75 and had to turn the lights off. So a lot of learning went into that, and a lot of misfortune. And yeah, we just stuck to it. We realized there's no handouts in the sport at the top level, and if you want something, you got to go get it. And
Love that attitude.
Yeah, so we reached out to Sail GP when you know, we thought there might be an opportunity when the teams are, you know, starting to, you know, sell off and become privately owned. And, you know, finally we got the league's attention and said we had some real investors willing to, you know, buy a team. And yeah, here we are. We're seven months later and a lot of wheeling and dealing. And yeah, we're on the start line halfway through, you know, season five.
Yeah.
Or four. I mean,
it's been an amazing journey to watch. Yeah. I mean, we've sort of been watching this, you know, in our little world. And mate, what a baptism of fire! I mean, it's like you say. I read a post you wrote today on Bookface. it is a baptism of fire. It's straight into people that have been sailing these boats for, you know, 3-4 years, whatever it is, and it's just a massive learning curve you've got to go through.
Yeah, it's daunting, and to think that, you know, well, I've been a part of the league, and to basically just to know that, you know, you're coming into something with all these amazing sailors that have been at this for so long, is full on. And to say the truth, it's tough. Like, you know, we got our ass kicked. excuse my
French. But we love that honesty. So please just, you know, explain it in honest terms, because, you know, I don't think I don't think Jordan will ever understand the feeling of one of these boats underneath you as you're going, because we're obviously never going to sail one. But, mate, I mean, hats off. I mean, it's just insane to be thinking, you know, I'm going 46 knots here. Yeah, cool. No worries. But now I have to decide where I'm going tactically.
I love how you think that there's thinking involved. there is no time to think. You are reacting.
Well, we saw that on the weekend, didn't we? As well, you know.
Yeah, and not so much reacting in a few cases with the collisions, but yes. It is full on. And you know, to think that, you know, we're ripping around this race course. I think our top speed is 46 and a half knots. You know, this weekend. And you know, all the other boats doing that same speed around you and kind of reacting erratically and just, yeah, it's a lot to process. And, we're getting there, and, we've made some good strides. And, you know, I think between most of the people on the boat, we're now like 16 hours of sailing together or something like that. Maybe even less.
Yeah. Wow.
Think about these cup guys that have been doing it for years and have probably thousands of hours.
Yeah.
But it's cool. And, you know, we made some good strides so far. And, you know, I think when things slow down a little bit, we obviously get a little more comfortable. And, you know, we had a decent event in Abu Dhabi, and, you know, coming third in that event was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Felt more like M32 racing than anything.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
You don't have to unfurl the furler.
Yeah, exactly. Minus that. But yeah, it's, you know, that's those conditions where everything is kind of slower for us is a bit more optimal at the moment. And you know, I think as we get more comfortable with the speeds and just our routines and our communication, I think things will slow down a lot in the breeze, and we'll be able to hit those markers and execute when we need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting because I did think about the, you know, you talked about the hours you've done, like was it, you say 17 or whatever it was. And the Aussie team probably has been, as a whole, been together, well, it sort of formed around 2013 and did all those thousands of hours for the cup. And then, you know, you probably got a few little changes, but probably fully together since 2017 sort of thing. And it's that teamwork. Oh, I try and explain to people when we're looking at these boats, they're the most teamwork orientated boat I've ever seen. You know, like if all the elements have to move together, you can't do something without affecting anybody else on the boat. And there's just that sort of unconscious knowledge of a body movement or a flick or an eye look that you've got to pick up from each other, you know, like it's happening so quick, as you said. And that Abu Dhabi event's a classic example. It's lighter wind speed, it's slower, so you can just sail. You've got more opportunity to sail. It's less about the instant response. people just don't understand how teamwork orientated and how close you have to be as a team, and sort of subconsciously understanding each other that you need to succeed in these boats.
Oh, you're spot on. And, you know, like BP said, I mentioned it in my post, how, you know, all six people on the boat, just need to be in this like perfect synchrony. You know, we call it, you know, Mike and I are trying to describe this, and, you know, the communication and the movements around the boat is like an orchestra. You know, you have all these instruments playing, and they all need to be hitting their tune like at the exact perfect time to make this masterpiece. And yeah, you know, I think mentioning Tom Slingsby, I don't know, it's appropriate yet. It might be a little too soon, yeah, but no. You know, guy with thousands of hours in this boat, you know, smashes into a stationary mark. can't get his boat across the finish line. So it's a lot going on, and yeah, you know, these mistakes are costly. And
well, it's how quick anyway. It all happens. It's how quick it all happens. Yeah. We talk about as humans, you know, getting into the flow state, and you know, whether it's at work or a play or at a sport you do. Now, usually that's defined individually. And what you just said then is getting into a flow state with the entire crew on a normal boat, let's say, you know, an Etchel or a keel boat or a, you know, any sort of boat. It's generally you've got time to react, whereas these boats you can't. And that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, no, it's true. And the other beauty about these things is you can't hide. You know, if you screw up in your role, it's every movement and, you know, whether it's video or audio or which button you're pushing, when you're pushing it, it's all recorded. So there's no hiding. You're on the hook for pretty much anything. So, you know, best way to do it is just own your mistakes if you make one, and at least you'll have the respect of the people around you if you do that.
Yeah. So for the listener, you know, one thing we know on SailGP is the higher you fly the boat, the faster you're going to go, right? So that sort of, but it's more than that. It's the height through the manoeuvres and coming out with speed and all those elements that you normally have on a boat. But just think about it from the perspective of if you're a flight controller and the skipper turns the boat and the boat accelerates and you're at max height already, an acceleration means more flow over the foil, which means more lift. And you're already at max height, that means airborne and crashed, you know, like it's, and so you have to understand exactly what each other's doing, or, you know, and it's so easy to make a mistake on these things. It's clearly evident, you know, like you guys spent thousands, or, you know, 17 hours sailing, and I've probably spent hundreds and hundreds of hours observing and explaining these boats to people. And so, you know, I feel like I'm the best non-sailor person that's never sailed one of these boats out on the shore at the moment. Like I've got mastery of this boat. I think I could coach pretty comfortably. But
I'd probably compete with you on that one. Actually, I've watched a lot of video and seen a lot of data.
Yeah,
doesn't seem to be helping yet, though.
No. Well, that's
actually a point I was going to raise. We know, you know, you did a bit of time as a flight controller, and that's obviously a valuable experience. But getting onto the helm, how do you feel with that? I mean, it's a massive transition, right?
Oh my God, the relief of this weight on your shoulders has just left the building, not having to fly the boat anymore. What a hectic job that is!
Oh. Right. So you're saying it's actually a step down to drive the boat around the track?
Yeah, I'm loving this. I'm loving this this demotion, if you will.
Yeah, right. I love it.
It's really cool. I'm excited, and you know, I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to drive the boat. And it's definitely still full on. And you know, you have to make these quick decisions and try to keep everyone safe and not crash into anyone, and fly the boat out of some maneuvers and. So yeah, it's a balancing thing, but I think probably my biggest role is to try to give as much of a heads up to the team, for what's to come. And the more prepped I can kind of make them, the easier and smoother everything's going to run.
Well, that's going to come with time, and there's no question that, you know, we've already touched on that. And I don't think that's even anything to worry about. I mean, you know, we'll touch on your career a bit later, but you know, I think all of us have absolutely utmost faith in what you're doing.
I've I've got something where Taylor's the master, mate. I feel like Taylor's straight to the top of the class and something. I want to bring it out. I do want to bring it out.
Go on then.
One thing we love, Taylor, is we love banter, and we put the boot into a lot of the other SailGP skippers when we're chatting to them, just going, you know, all these press conferences, you know, where they're thinking one thing but saying really nicely, nicely structured, media friendly responses. Doesn't work, you know. The media, everyone sees through it. Everyone reads it, you know. Like we push for the banter. We want to see it. And I saw at your press conference, we're here to be the disruptors, you know. So I feel like you're ready to call someone out, like in press conference. I can see that you'll be the sort of bloke that will go, yeah, no, that's bullshit. Let's talk it honestly, sort of thing. I feel like that you've got enough independence. You've got your own backers. You're good. You're good. I think Taylor could take charge of the banter.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with that. It definitely bites me in the bites me a few times more than none. But yeah, I try to keep it exciting, and you know, otherwise, you know, what are we doing? It wouldn't be very fun if we just have to go in there and be super official all the time. And I often don't think before I speak, which it's not always my greatest moments, but at least you get what I'm thinking.
But that's you, and that's what we love. But Jordan, I think we can move away from the boat banter, because you know we're talking SailGP here.
Yep.
So one of us is going the wrong way is not really going to work. Yep. You know, as you're crossing tacks, it's a bit fast.
Yep, it's too fast. I'm interested.
One of us going.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I'll talk about it later on, but I don't know if you know, Taylor, like I'm during the racing, I actually am in the coach's box and I've got the headphones on so I can listen into every boat. And so it is quite interesting to see the discussions that do go on. Particularly the best day for me was...
I know you're coming with here. I think you're going to talk about Saturday.
Saturday was the best day. You guys are so funny. The banter that was going on the boats was just hilarious, you know. Like, it was just...
We were just hoping the broadcast wasn't going to come to us during that downtime. But, you know, we kept it...
Entertained.
Within reason, yeah. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all the baits were just bantering away and having fun, you know, like it was good fun, you know, and a lot of discussion. So there is a lot of friendliness out there, I'll just say so. But, yeah. In terms of, let's sort of roll into you, like you're from the Virgin Islands, so I guess surrounded by water, did you have a choice to go sailing? Like, are you a family of sailors at all, or what's your background?
Absolutely no choice.
No choice.
Yes. Yeah. When I got mad at my sister, I had to find a way to get off the island, and I was running away. Funny enough, like, you know, my parents were members of the yacht club down there. It's a very small island. You know, the water is obviously a huge part of the culture and the livelihood down there. And did my parents kind of force me into it at first? Yeah, I'd say so. But yeah, you know, at the age of six, you know, all your friends are doing it, and it became like an adventure for us. You know, we have this amazing playground and beautiful weather all year round, and you know, what wasn't better than just going out and exploring the new islands and being in this just, you know, paradise.
Did it start off like that, where you were sort of, you know, going sailing and getting out there and having a look around and, you know, going for a bit of a tour?
Yeah, totally. We well, it quickly became competitive amongst, you know, myself and my friends. But
yeah,
it did start as an adventure. You know, we'd push off our yacht club beach. I don't know if you've ever been down there, but you know, it's facing the east, so we just have the trade winds blowing us, you know, back onto the beach. So when we're really young, you know, you go out, and if you flip over, you just kind of get blown back onto the beach, and you know, no no drama. And then as you start to get a little more comfortable, you can, you know, break out around the corner, and next thing you know, you're in 15, 20 foot waves, and you know, either the Caribbean Ocean on one side or the Atlantic Ocean on the other.
Wow. Nice.
So wow. Yeah. And there's all these beautiful islands around, and we'd tie our boats up to a rock and go explore these like new islands and different salt ponds. And, You know, we'd find ourselves in like waist deep mud at times and in the salt ponds and just exploring and
smash open a few oysters.
No oysters, more coconuts and
coconuts. We'll be all right then.
Other sea creatures, but
what boat were you sailing? What boat were you sailing around? Was this in an Opti at this stage?
Yeah, we sailed. Wow. Just had like a fleet of little Optis. We'd pull up on the beach at the yacht club and
nice.
Yeah,
I'm reliving this. I'm feeling it. I'm loving it.
It does.
I miss it. That's
fair. It does. You know, like that. That seems almost like the perfect way to start a kid off sailing. You know, like tropical paradise, just cruising around, exploring, having adventures with your mates. You know, like it. It's like a lot of people, kids you see, you would jump on their bike and they go exploring with their mates on land, and you're doing the same thing, but you're using your little sailing boat as your bike sort of thing, and you and your mates are heading off. And just exploring the sea, it, you know, for lifelong sailors like us, that's just a fantasy way to start your life. You know, like did you realize it at the time, or it was just normal?
Yeah, you know, it's just normal. It obviously you look back on it and you realize how lucky we were and how great we had it. And yeah, it was just. I think that's kind of what has been so cool about just the generations that have come out of, you know, the St. Thomas Yacht Club and how it just keeps, you know, sailors so, engaged and loving of the sport for so long. Because I think that it starts out as kind of just like this amazing adventure for all the young kids there.
Yeah.
And then eventually a lot of them go on to race and do great things, as we've seen. But the fact that, you know, at least for us in my generation, we never really had a coach. We just kind of went out and sailed with each other and pushed each other. And it became a competition. But at the same time, it was just this awesome playground and this adventure.
It's interesting because that's one of the things we talk about, you know, like with all the coaching that I've done in the past. When you talk to a parent of young kids, just the number one priority I give them is just let them have fun, go sailing as much as possible, get them out there. And a classic example of that is we've got a lot of talent comes out of Lake Macquarie in Australia because it's this big, beautiful lake, you know, and pretty much that whole Australian team's off that lake. There's this whole element of just being able to go sailing, and it's easy, and just time on the boat. If parents ask, how do I make my kid better? It's just time on the boat, you know, and that's what you had. And, you know, that's what makes it fun, you know. Talking in a coaching session, talking about cunning a mind, and twist and all that sort of crap is not what's going to make you better. It's time on the boat and feel as a kid, developing that feel through your butt and just mucking around on boats. Is the secret to being.
We couldn't get to the yacht club quick enough after school every day.
Yeah, right.
We were just like ready to go.
You can just imagine it.
We did have one other game we liked to play when right outside of our yacht club was big ferry channel. You know, all the ferries would come through from basically downtown St. Thomas, and they'd either, you know, branch off to go to St. John or all the way up to Tortola. And there's a rock right outside our yacht club called Current Cut. And it's, you know, in the middle between Great St. James and the tip of St. Thomas. There's a rock right in the middle, and there's two passages you can go through on either side, ton of currents, you know, ripping through this little place where kind of the Atlantic and the Caribbean Sea are meeting. And so the ferries, you know, they have a tight squeeze to get through there on their own. And we'd go out there on our Optis and try to position ourselves like with the perfect distance in between each boat that the ferries, like our goal was to get the ferries to come to a stop. And you know, these things are ripping through at 30, 35 knots. And our parents must just be like, you know, freaking out watching this from shore when they see the ferry stop and all the little sailboats out there in the distance. Like,
so sail GP's nothing, mate.
Yeah. That was maybe not our parents' favorite game, but it was fun for us.
That's very cool.
I'm gonna ask the standard question that we sort of always ask here. Obviously, bar karate is all about pathways and how you got to where you got to. When did you sort of decide that this was number one serious in terms of a sport, And number two, when did you sort of get the opportunity, if you like, to make it a career?
7 years old.
Yeah. And you started sailing at six. Perfect.
Exactly.
Love the answer.
No, it was, I'm not super sure. I think it was probably in my early teenage years where there's kind of like an eye-opening moment, I guess, for me when everyone probably knows what the, you know, Bermuda Gold Cup is. It's one of the most prestigious match race events in the world. And
You've won it?
A few times.
Yep.
But you look back at the names on that trophy and, you know, anyone that's done really anything in this sport is on that trophy. Minus a few exceptions, but I traveled.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thanks for that.
I traveled to that event when I was 13 years old, and they still host a junior gold cup alongside the gold cup event, which is hosted in Opties, and they, you know, try to invite the best sailor at the time from each country to come and like have this, you know, kind of mini world championship in Bermuda during the Gold Cup. So when I was 13, I traveled to that event with Peter Holmberg, who was, you know, one of the best at the time in match racing, America's Cup helmsman, and ended up, you know, being a part of Alinghi and Oracle. And I think that was a moment where I saw him racing in Bermuda, and I was just, you know, a little grom, you know, trying to go win this Optimus event, and I was like, I want to go do this one day.
There you go. That pretty well sums it up.
Yeah, but,
yeah. And then, you know, I wanted to go to the America's Cup. That was the goal.
It was there in front of you. Obviously, you saw it, so therefore you understood it, and you could see the pathway, I guess. So that probably was an advantage for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So. For you, then, you know, obviously you muck around in Opties, you're living Virgin Islands, and then you sort of, for you, you know, you got sucked into the whole American college system. You went through Boston College, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, it probably even started before that in the St. Thomas. We actually didn't really know what high school sailing was. Yeah. And we, you know, someone introduced it to us when I was a freshman in high school, and my two kind of best sailing buddies were a year ahead of me. So they're sophomores. And we were told about this like high school sailing circuit in the United States. And we're like, oh, you know, like, okay, like, I guess we could try to give this a go. And, you know, our yacht club bought us these like really beat up old 420s, what they're racing in the high school circuit. And so we put this, you know, this team together with basically just enough to fill three boats to do like the team race events. And then, you know, we had to like flip a coin to see who was going to do the fleet racing events. So we started this high school team, my freshman year, and went to win the high school national championship, both team race and fleet race. In the entire United States, just as like, you know, this just a bunch of like island kids trying to make it to the stage. We had to sell hot dogs at lunch to raise money to travel to the, you know, the high school national championship.
Love it.
Just like the cartoons, lemonade stand out the front of your house.
Yeah.
Man, it was real. We're hustling.
Hustling. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Were they nice hot dogs though? Yeah. Can we talk about the hot dogs for a bit?
No, BP, move on.
We're going down this path because we have, you know, the Bunnings sausage on bread is quite an important thing for us in Australia. Did you have onions with it?
No, we just bought hot dogs in bulk. We had a grill that we lit up at, you know, they gave us one day a week we could sell. We were like the catering service at our school for one day a week.
I love it. Yeah.
That's and cool. the sailing team came together. We hustled. We threw the hot dogs on the grill.
What a cool story!
Sold them for 10 times what we bought them for, and made a little bit of money to get to that travel.
What BP's alluding to here in Australia, we don't do the hot dog thing. We do what we call a sausage sanger.
The sausage sizzle, mate.
Sizzle. Sorry, the sizzle. And you go to the local hardware store every week is a charity group. Every time you go to the hardware store, there's a charity group downstairs with a Barbie doing a sausage sizzle. And it's the same thing. And that's what BP's alluding to, like the similarity but the difference, you know. Like next time you're in Oz, mate, I'll take you for a sausage sizzle and a beer. You'll love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, we weren't buying our hot dogs at the hardware store, but I trust they were good.
It's all right. Yeah. But, yeah, so this whole element of going and, you know, as you said, these island kids just jumping into the school championship and you won both the fleet and the match, the teams racing. Did that cause like a little bit of a stir as a young kid, or did that just change your thought process? Or like, oh, hang on, I'm pretty good at this, or, you know, how did it impact? Did it give you a free college scholarship?
No scholarships, unfortunately, but it did set us all up pretty well for kind of getting recruited into these good schools and then continuing on into the college ceiling, like you mentioned. And yeah, went on to Boston College and, you know, sailed 4 years on a top sailing team, which was incredible. And, you know, we take a lot of crap for kind of this very basic college sailing program that we have here in the U.S. and that, you know, yeah. No one's ever going to come out of it as a better sailor because it's not a skiff, it's not a foiling boat. But like you mentioned, we were on the water so many days.
Yeah.
We don't have that in Australia. We don't have it. Okay. And I actually am a little bit in envy of it. If I had the opportunity as a young kid going through school to actually choose sailing, I ended up choosing windsurfing in my final year as a subject, but it wasn't a collegiate thing. It wasn't something you go and do and compete against something. You were getting marked, right? Now,
yeah.
If we had that in Australia, I mean, it's a cool thing. I love it.
Yeah, it was cool, and you know, we were traveling every weekend. You know, going competing against
and friends.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like it, you know, truthfully, it did make me a better sailor.
Mm.
And just like the super aggressive, like tactical racing every weekend,
yep.
Like you cannot beat that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Know how hard we were pushing each other, you know, at practice every day. And then, you know, there was the team racing side of it. And to me, that was the most fun. And that's kind of what led me into my next path in life after college.
Mm. I'm really interested in terms of that whole approach, like, because it can't have been easy coming from your little tropical paradise to Boston, because the temperature change is quite noticeable, and the whole approach to life is quite different in the Northeast. You know, like it is obviously sailing's a major thing, but geez, it gets cold there. Do you remember that first transition where you went, oh man, this is completely different?
Yeah, you know, I cut my long hair, took off my do-rag. Swapped it out for a dry suit, and the rest is history.
Are you just making that up or genuine?
No, that's real. Like we showed up to like the high school national championships with do-rags and I had hair down on my shoulders and
full rasta mode.
Yeah, but man, it was cold.
So cold.
Boston winters. You know, we were sailing in February in Boston, and here we are in, you know, late March here in Newport, which isn't even as cold as Boston, and I don't have any dream of getting near a sailboat here right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Let alone walking outside.
I don't miss it. Yeah.
No.
Miss it.
I don't know how you'd have done it, mate. Like the level of cold that you guys experienced there, you know, where you are there, and like where I live is kind of where you were born, you know. It's this, it never gets cold where I live, you know, so that whole concept of going into cold weather, like New Zealand was killing me, you know, that Saturday, I think it was Saturday, it was the cold day, or Friday, whatever, I was freezing, you know. And for you to go as a kid, you're probably under-resourced, you know, you didn't know the sort of boots you needed and the gloves you needed and all that sort of furry stuff. You know, your first few months would have been hell.
I was a tough kid. I hated it, but I knew that everyone else was hitting it that much more than me.
Oh.
And that's kind of how I thrived, I think. It was just, just knowing that everyone was out there being miserable and that, like, if I just, you know, kind of got on with it and
if I wasn't as miserable
I'd just, you know, just outsell.
So, you know, obviously you had the most red hot debut in the world of match racing. I think once you joined 2012 and you were world champion 2013, something like that. You just came in like a bomb, mate. What happened? Did you just lit a fuse and away you went, or what? How did that go?
Pulled a few strings.
Say, what happened? Where'd all your skills go after that? I don't know.
No.
Now you're getting last at events. Maybe a little bit like sneakily did a few events here and there, you know, as a teenager and kind of throughout my college sailing and
my ferry dodging.
In my last year at university, they hosted a match race national championship title in all the universities in the United States and did that and won that event. I loved it. I loved the team racing. I loved the boat on boat action. And I think the team racing really set me up for success in match racing in a way. And, you know, just having that boat on boat experience and being able to put someone in the back of the fleet was, it was a valuable lesson and skills to have when I jumped into match racing. But, what I do have to credit for a lot of my match racing success was the Chicago Match Race Center.
Yeah, yeah.
So after college sailing, I moved to Chicago. I don't know why I moved to somewhere colder than I was already in.
I was going to say, now we're going colder.
So went to Chicago and Don Wilson had started this Match Race Center out there, bought these beautiful boats, this massive houseboat to have our kind of clubhouse out of. And I was running the Match Race Center and just had access to sailing the boats like nonstop, whether I was coaching or umpiring or, you know, running practice for our membership or competing myself. I was just surrounding myself with it and basically tried to, you know, have it engulf my life.
We've often said how much you learn from coaching.
Actually doing the umpiring as well is even another whole level, because then you see it from the umpire's perspective. You know, like that's some of the coaching I've had to do, you know, when I'm coaching match races and the, you know, they're just pushing the umpire so much and they don't understand the psyche of what's going through the umpire's mind, you know, and just trying to just calm them down. You know, you've got all that. Like that couldn't have been a better apprenticeship.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was huge, yeah. And, I just surrounded myself with match racing and, you know, some of the best guys in the world came to us to train and to compete in Chicago. And, I just scraped every little bit of money that I could to, you know, travel to these events and, you know, start competing at a slightly higher level. And, sailing with buddies, next thing you know, we're, you know, winning grade two events and getting, you know, invites and qualifying into tour events. And
beautiful.
Yeah.
Love it.
Finally, we won the Gold Cup and the Monsoon Cup in 2012, like you said. And next thing you know, we're on the tour in 2013.
Yeah. And as I said,
just phenomenal.
As a match racer, like you say, so there's a bunch of youngsters listening in trying to go and be a match racer. What do you reckon the secret to being a good match racer is?
Coach?
I'd say that, you know, a coach can talk to you about the rules, talk to you about the tactics, can talk to you about everything, but that boat handling...
Well, there's
you,
definitely sailing, the sailing side of
sailing
it.
Sailing ability, that ability to position your boat and hold that boat and actually exercise that those rights that you've got.
It's a good point. Jay.
That boat control.
I'd say, you know, it's... you know, try to do as much like team racing and match racing as you can. One of the biggest things I try to tell like the next generation is, and which applies pretty heavily into match racing, is, you know, go sail as many different boats with as many different people as you can. you know, because the whole match racing tour was based around, you know, showing up at a new place, hopping in a new boat, with a different amount of teammates in that boat with you, and just trying to figure out, you know, the guys that could hop in and just make it work just a little bit better than the other team. Those were the ones.
Also, in the end, is knowing exactly where the wind is all the time, and you can actually, you know, control the situation around you. I mean, if you're in control, that's the key, right?
Yeah, and you know, not to discredit and going out and sailing with the same team all the time, and that applies to every sailing that you do. You know, every boat you sail, the more consistent you can be with the same team and that communication line and, you know, your synchrony on the boat, like which we're, you know, battling with right now in SailGP.
Yep.
The longer you have that relationship with the same group of people, the easier it gets every time you step into the boat. And, you know, I had a great group with me that kind of stuck by my side and paid their own way at the beginning. And, you know, eventually we found some sponsorship and we're winning prize money. So it became worth their while. But, we were scraping the bottom of the barrel, just trying to show up at events. And, my buddy Hayden Goodrick and I, you know, he passed away, but he worked his ass off to find us the money necessary to go travel to these events. And we worked hard to, you know, keep that core group together, and everyone bought into the program and they realized that, you know, if they buy in a little bit now, it's going to be, you know, that much sweeter when we're winning the big bucks on the tour in a few years.
Let's skipping to the younger generation. Do you think the pathway now is kind of not so much paved, but possibly more difficult? You know, like there's more people actually seeing people like yourself and people, you know, that have gone through the hardships. Now there is a definite path because there is media, there is sponsorship, there is all these things happening. And do you think it's do you think that's sort of happening now with the younger generation?
I think it varies where you are and where you grew up. I know we're having a bit of issues with that in the US right now with the funding and the sponsorship and kind of the financial backing for, you know, a lot of our Olympic athletes. And I think, you know, there's other countries that it's a lot easier to get in, you know, to get the funding that you need to go compete internationally and compete against the best and, you know, to get to that next level. It varies. And I think it varies country to country with really the type of sailing that you're, you know, trying to get involved with. Back in the day, obviously, you know, New Zealand was very good at kind of creating this pathway and this next generation of, you know, match racers, I would say. And their keelboat program was, you know, phenomenal. I think that, you know, just, you know, if it doesn't exist, if the pathway doesn't exist in the area that you're living, there's always a way to create your own pathway. It didn't really exist for us. And, we just worked for every minute we could get to, you know, try to just build and find that money and, you know, keep pushing.
I dare say there's some pretty talented sailors still back in the Virgin Islands that didn't take your path and, you know, they're still there and all they've, you know, not become professional sailors. I'm sure that's probably the case.
Yeah. Again, like I said, it's incredible to see the talent that's come out of the small yacht club down there and the different paths that everyone has taken and the amount of like just national, world, you know, continental championships that the St. Thomas Yacht Club has collected as a whole is, you know, competing with probably some of the best clubs in the world. So we're lucky to have that little gem growing up and to kind of always just see that next generation, you know, popping up and then, you know, raising some eyebrows and just kind of taking their own path.
Do you get back there much? Do you get back to the yacht club much?
Not enough. I try to get back usually two to three times a year. I have a little niece down there now, so it gives me that little extra push to get back and see her. And But man, when I go back to show up to the yacht club and just remember the good days and to, you know, see how beautiful it is down there, and to, you wish you could just tell, you know, those little Opti sailors, like, how lucky they are. You can
well,
tell.
This is my point. You know, this is the point I was going to say. When you get back to that club, do these young Opti sailors know who you are? Do they say, oh, he's Taylor Canfield, you know? Oh, cool. I'm sure they would.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they necessarily know. Unfortunately, my face is plastered, you know, on a massive, I don't even know, poster on the wall in the yacht club. But it's cool. The coaches down there, you know, try to do a good, or they try to make sure that the, you know, the Opti sailors down there are recognizing kind of, you know, what they're, you know, I guess
could be doing.
Have achieved. And
yes, absolutely.
The older generations from the club have gotten to, and how, you know, I guess just how hard everyone's pushed to get to where they are. And I think that is something really cool about that club, is like, you know, there's such a pedigree and a history now of some great sailors that have come out of there that, you know, the kids have something to, you know, to work towards and to, you know, aspire to be, which is super cool.
Mate, you've had the chance to travel the world, go sailing everywhere. Have you got a favorite spot you've ever sailed? Like a location to go for a yacht?
I mean, if you've never sailed in the Virgin Islands.
He hasn't stepped out.
I knew that answer was coming.
It'd be silly to say anywhere but there, but.
Okay, yeah, let's rephrase the question, Taylor.
Yeah,
outside of your hometown, which is your favorite place in the world to sail?
I love it.
Actually, just across the bay.
Oh, come on.
No.
No, that's good. I like it.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I mean, geez, you go to places like San Francisco and Lake Garda and, you know, Sydney Harbor, and it would be so hard to pick one of these places.
That's
right. That's okay.
I'm just interested if something, there's like, we always crap on about Port Vincent on this show, which is this little tiny, tiny country town where we all sort of met. It's the most perfect sailing water in the world, like set up. It's got a little caravan park. It's got one bar, one pub, and a yacht club. That's it. And there's about 200 people live there. And it's like the most perfect sailing setup in the world, and we just love it. And so, you know, whether it was this little hidden gem you've got, where like everything's just perfect, you know, like you go there to do a regatta.
We'll have to do a swap. You come to St. Thomas, I'll come there, and then we can really.
Yeah, I'm keen. I'm heading that way. Definitely heading that way in the next couple of next 6 months or so. So.
All right. What about boats? What about, you know, you've sailed a lot of different boats. Are there any boats that really you really love, you know, like, or something unique that you've sailed that we probably haven't heard of?
Oh, that you haven't heard of?
Because, you know, you Yanks got the scow thing going. Well, do I call you a Yank? I know you're part of, you can't, I've got to be careful how I phrase it. But, you know, there's different things, you know, in the northeast there. All that scow thing, which we really have never sailed a scow. I mean, Bill Goggins is forever crapping onto us about, and we love you, Bill. I just rephrase that. And he keeps, you know, we're going to focus in on the scows a little bit, but, you know, you've got the ice boats there, which we love, and those scows do look super cool, you know. We've got the skiffs, you've got the scows. Beville.
Yeah, I mean, geez, I'm trying to think, like, all the boats that I've sailed. Would say the Volvo 65 coming across the Atlantic is probably pretty low on the list.
Yeah, Bossy would love to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that. I guess, like, you know, you classify it as cool boats and, you know, like this competitive, really good racing. And, you know, I'd say the Etchells class is up there for some of the best competitive racing you can do. But yeah, man, those boats are brutal.
Brutal, yeah, aren't they? Yeah.
I still have like a scar on my hand and a hole from, you know, hiking off that main sheet. And, but yeah, it's, you know, I think back to the worlds that we won in that class and, I don't know, 2014 or something, you know, 96 boats on the line, you know, it's just like all on. All the boats are going, you know, within a tenth of a knot, and it is just a grind. Like, you know, you're just looking for every little inch. And oftentimes that inch that you're missing is the difference between a, you know, a top 10 and a 30th. So, yeah, those close one design racing boats are, I think, are so good.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, but then you look at these boats that we're sailing now, that this LGP F50s are just incredible machines. You know, the step down from that, the M32 class is great. I love racing in it. It's a really good vibe, a lot of fun. You know, super physical for everyone on board. You know, the boats are fast, exhilarating, they're light. And yeah, I think match racing wise, I think the Tom 28s would take the cake there. Super, you know, physical, and then also just really agile. You could really throw them around, and to the point where you could kind of get caught out by throwing it around too hard and lose too much speed. So yeah, just really physical boats, and they're really rewarded, good boat handling and kinetics, and so yeah, that's a little bit of a lot for you.
You've done a lot of your match racing. You've done a lot of your teams racing, and you mentioned earlier, obviously, about the Volvo 65. Do you enjoy going offshore?
Not particularly. No. I mean, who doesn't love the feeling of their own bed or nicely?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's one of those things. Right? Coming in at the end of the day and doing a bit of bar karate and having a beer.
Yeah, so good. But yeah, you know, I enjoy the shorter sprints. You know, the 600-mile races on a boat that you can do it under 3 days or just over three days. Like, those are okay for me. But yeah, again, I did a training leg for the, you know, with the Volvo guys on the Vestas 11th hour, and came, you know, it was a pretty quick trip across the Atlantic from Lisbon to Newport, but. Yeah, it was still 9.5 days, and it was it was a lot. You know, I was ready to have a proper meal and a shower after day four. So
yeah, it's a different thing, isn't it?
We're not even halfway there. So
yeah, imagine doing it on a mini, mate.
Oh, I can't. Sorry, well, you're on your own there.
The good part is I've never done a transit landing on a mini, so that's all cool. Yeah. But it is definitely one of those things, isn't it? It's a pathway thing. But no, that's the question I just wanted to ask, because you know, people in your position who have, you know, you've got the ability to get on any boat. I mean, that's how it is. You know, you've got world champions championships under your belt. You can go and do, you know, you can generally get an opportunity for these opportunities. I just was curious as to what you actually loved, if you did actually love going offshore, that's all.
Yeah. Well, obviously...
No, I keep running through my head all these new boats that are just popping up. You know, it's crazy.
Go on, keep going. Spill them out.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, to go and sail like the classics. I just did the 12-meter Worlds last year. And
love it. You're in my territory again.
On one of those and just think about the history and the, you know, how they used to race these things with metal sheets in the America's Cup. And
it's full bore.
Yeah. Everyone has its own little story. And that's, I think that's what's so cool is like, again, I push this on all the young kids. It's like, just go sail as many types of boats as you can.
Mm.
I actually did quite a few regattas in France on, USA 9, which was the second ever America's Cup boat built in 1936, and that was an experience. Mahogany rig, boom, still wooden. Imagine. You know, four knots upwind, four knots downwind, four knots upwind, four knots downwind.
I think we did like 12 knots on the Enterprise actually one day.
There you go.
A little scary, but
What about? I mean,
no water left on the beach.
Yeah, drags it away.
Yeah. Tide's gone out.
Where you live, like, what about the super yachts? Have you ever done any time on a super yacht? 50 crew?
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm interested yet.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I just wondered.
I like that comment.
Yeah.
Yet.
Not ready for my ceiling to slow down that much yet, I don't think.
No, definitely not. And I suggest don't.
I was just talking to a buddy that just got back from St. Bart's, and you know, to hear his stories about just everything going on and the, you know, just the, what it takes.
Polishing stainless.
Yeah, I mean, that side of it definitely doesn't, it's not very fun. But yeah, to like just hear his stories about how big the gear is and, you know, just making sure that, you know, yeah, someone doesn't die on one of these things, really.
That's it. I agree. It's
probably the biggest challenge. And
so,
yeah, I know there's a lot to it, and it's a kind of a different style of sailing, but it's cool to hear his stories about it. And it actually made me, you know, that made me that little bit more interested, but still, I don't know if I'm there yet.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, let's, like, we're sort of coming near the end, so let's top and tail with the GP. Obviously, the boats are on their way to Bermuda, which is the next stop, early May. I'll be in Florida at the same time, so I'll yell out across the water and say good day. with your boat, like, it was pure carnage in Christchurch. Much damage to your boat, mate?
A bit.
just a bow.
Yeah, I might need a new bow and a new portion, you know, a new 8 feet just behind the bow. But yeah, it's it got a little banged up for sure. It was kind of an unexpected, unavoidable collision that we had with the Canadians. Obviously, hate crashing boats. Unless we're match racing.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, and the boat did take a pretty good bang. And you know, to see them cutting a, you know, an 8 foot hole on the side of your boat when 20 minutes after the thing's out of the water is you know, not fun to watch. But the reality is they got to get the basically wet core out of the boat as quick as possible, and make sure that it's not going to do damage to the rest of the hull. So there's definitely some work to do. And
yeah,
I think other teams probably have a bit more, which,
we're
fortunate in that sense.
So I was just going to say for the listeners, I just want to explain the F50s are carbon skins with an aluminium honeycomb. And so, you know, if you put it away wet with a hole in it, you know, that is not going to be pretty.
Go yucky.
Yep. So
carbon, aluminium and salt water.
Yeah. So just sorry. Now, sorry to speak over you there. Continue on. BP, you were going to ask something?
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just going to say that, you know, the SailGP is sort of, it's been, you know, people are pushing harder. People are pushing a lot harder now, and it's been sort of promising to happen for a while. And, you know, there's been close quarters, if you like. But this weekend in particular seemed to be very close. And obviously with
who was
Tom's
the villain?
Incident.
Who was the villain? Who was the one doing the damage? Hey?
Phil Robertson.
Oh, no. I wanted you to say.
Yeah,
he was banging into everyone. Anyway,
it's a bit of a trend. I think you could ask, you know, most of the sailors in the fleet, but he seems to attract a lot of close calls in the league right now, and he's pushing it hard, and they're doing well, but at the same time, he's doing a lot of damage and leaving a lot of, you know, broken parts in his rearview mirror.
Well, you guys, you've got a long history because obviously the match racing circuit against each other a fair bit. So, you know, he's just bringing out some match racing techniques, perhaps. I don't know. But they're fragile boats.
Yeah, and dangerous boats at those speeds, you know.
Yep.
You like to be the tough guy and say that you're not afraid out there. But when a boat smashes into you, you're doing 30 plus knots. Well, it's real. Like people,
you know, touching on Tom's incident, you know, he was clearly shaken. I did actually have the opportunity to have a little chat to him afterwards, and he was shaken. You know, like he had to make a decision, And he did. And his decision was, obviously, he knew that, you know, racing rules wise, in apostrophe, he was in the wrong, but he had nowhere to go and he just had to do it. And it shook him up. He was, pretty shaken.
Yeah, no, it's real. It's full on. And, you know, the fact that hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage was done at this event is pretty tragic. You know, I don't think it's the reputation that, you know, the league wants, and I don't think it's the reputation that it should have. So I think everyone, hopefully it's a little reality check for the fleet after this event, and everyone realizes, you know, that you're thinking about now with the tefoils about to come out, and it's getting faster and it's getting more dangerous with appendages sticking out the sides of the boats now. So
yeah, well, I mean, Tom's decision was purely based on piercing through the back of the Canadian boat and literally potentially killing people, and so that's what his decision was based on.
I don't blame him for the decision he made, and he's taken it, you know, a pretty tough blow from a point standpoint from the league, but
for sure
you look at it and you're saying, oh, he's, you know, he's unlucky and he's getting it. You know, they may have been too harsh, but at the same time, they're trying to set a precedent to, you know, not crash these boats. It's expensive and it's dangerous. And, you know, if they, you know, you penalize someone enough and that many points, like, hopefully they're going to stop doing it.
You're right with the T4, mate. That thing is just a weapon. That looks like, weight in a cord. Depth on it, so she'll go right through. It's like a blade. It's hanging out the side. It's titanium. Have you had a chance to sail on it yet? Do you get any idea what it's going to feel like?
I have not sailed on it, but all reports from a control and speed standpoint are, you know, all positive. The boats are allegedly going to go, you know, close to 3 to 4 knots faster, I was told. And
Jesus.
And you'll have, you know, way more control at higher speeds.
Yeah, you should have more. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think the flight control will get a little bit easier. As I mentioned, that is that's great news, because that was not an easy task.
No, very cool. All right, so just to finalize this whole discussion, my friend, obviously for you guys with the USLGP team, you know, you've got to get that teamwork together. How long do you reckon it's going to take? When will you win, your first event? When will you win the series? Obviously you're a competitive dude. Like, you must have
a dream. No pressure, Taylor.
No, you don't
pressure.
Have to stick. You can tell me to piss off. I've got no issue with that. But, you know, like, you obviously have got a goal of, you're not there to come last. You're not there to just sort of fill a spot. You want to be dominant. I guarantee that you're in the back of your mind, you want to dominate the event. So I'm interested.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that when we're sailing at our best, we can compete. You know, we talked about, we walked away from this event in Auckland, or not Auckland, in Christchurch, and you know, we think that we sailed at probably 40% of our potential.
Yep.
And you know, we said that, you know, probably at 80% of our potential, you know, we're in the race. Yep. You know, we can get, you know, we can win races, I would say, with a good start and everything, you know, lining up well. And you know, it is really hard to know, but I like to think that we're on a good path to be, you know, competing at the top more regularly. And you know, when that'll all come together, you know, perfectly at an event, I can't tell you. But what I can tell you is how great the progression has been so far with the team. You know, to think that we're only, you know, 5 days into foiling, and, you know, despite our, you know, mistakes and our kind of lack of execution in Christchurch, you know, we're sailing around the course doing dry laps, and, you know, we're having some good starts, and, You know, we're just knocking at the door. So it's only a matter of, you know, just putting it all together that, you know, we're, you know, in five races in a row that we're going to, you know, start making these finals and kind of knocking at that top
absolutely,
spot.
Absolutely. Absolutely love it, mate. We got you back. Love it. We're fully behind you. So, yeah, just, keep doing what you're doing. I'm sure that, it'll all come together for you. So, smash it.
Yeah, no, we're pushing hard and, you know, we're kind of, I guess, trying to get some American sailing back in the spotlight a little bit, which would be cool to see. So I know everyone talks about how bad our country is at sailing, but we'll start turning some heads here shortly.
I genuinely believe the US is coming through again. Like I think there's, you know, it's a groundswell. And I think people might be a bit surprised with the old red, white, and blue in the next year or two, even at the Olympics.
Yeah,
I think
we got a few good youth in the pipeline as well that kind of are just under the radar, not quite, you know, showing up on the professional or Olympic scene yet. Mm. But I think there's going to be some good kids in the pipeline coming up, and old guys like me are going to have to step aside for them pretty quickly.
Yeah,
well, like you, Jesus Christ! You might have to be a podcast host.
Start soon, a podcast.
Jeez, be one of you guys. Sounds horrible.
Oh, fuck.
Thanks, mate. I'm kidding.
All right, mate. We'll leave it there.
All good, buddy. All good. Like I said, you know, good luck and just stay focused and just keep smashing it. All good.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, and let us know next time you're in the US and hopefully get you sailing in the Virgin Islands soon.
What I love about these Sail GP crews, guys and girls, is, you know, all of them are pretty well down to earth. And I just really enjoyed that chat.
Yeah.
Not knowing Taylor, not ever meeting Taylor before. It was just easy. Mm. You know, he had fairly humble beginnings in terms of you know, where his sailing come from to realizing that he had this talent and then following the dream. And I liked that about that that interview. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah, Taylor and I are kicking the footy in Christchurch and showing him the Aussie techniques. He was quite interested, actually. It was good fun.
No. Seriously? How were you kicking the footy?
Well, they had a rugby
AFL ball style, or
no, like he was holding it at the back, right? And I was saying, because he was trying to kick a torp, and he was holding it right at the back. And I said, well, in Aussie rules, like we need to keep our hand centered, so you can front, you can drop it into a drop punt, or you can roll it into a torp. And I was just showing him how to do it, and you know, just kicked two beautiful kicks, one a torp and one drop punt. Hadn't kicked a ball in about 20 years, so I was very lucky. And then
you didn't do a driver or something, mate.
Well, then
stepped away at that time.
And the American football, no, the American football got dropped into my hand and he said, throw that. And I went, and it was like the most perfect tight spiral. And I've just gone, now I'm walking away. Like it was just, everything was perfectly fluke. But anyway, it was good fun. It was good fun. But yeah, good fun hanging out with him. Really interesting. I really liked his passion for his home yacht club. And, you know, just he rolled really, I reckon that whole element where he talked about rolling the dice and, you know, his mates all just putting every dollar into it and doing it, you know, it was just bloody brilliant.
Well, I mean, we bang on about it all the time, don't we? You know, you gotta have the drive. And if there's a way, and if there's a will, there's a way type of thing, isn't it? But that's a particularly standout point from that interview. It was good.
Yep. What else is also good is, of course, our relationship with Radix Nutrition. We got a great email, boys. Do you want me to read that, or one of you guys want to jump on that one?
Well, I think read it out. Okay. But I think what I like about it is how versatile Radix is. So go on.
All right, Ian Westlake. Thanks for the email, bud. Huge fan of the show and the Radix. Just completed the pit water to cost race of Perseverance. Got to say, the Radix helped us stick it out. So like four boats finished the whole event. It was just no wind and it drew out and out.
Yeah.
After a few sherbets in the cockpit as the bar was closed and an hour in the cot, it was off on the 6:30 a.m. XPT to Sydney for another 9 hours of windless conditions. Luckily, I'd stashed some Radix in my kit bag. Unlike young Nick, our new mastman, who went for the toasty from the food cart, He had no chance. And there's a picture of one passed out, Nick, and Ian just obviously celebrating. So, and Radix sharing, he's got the blueberry 400 range.
Got the, in the 400 range,
yeah,
of course. Yeah, the blueberry breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Just looking jovial, just ready for the a few hours sitting on the train.
What a great.
Fighting fit. So, fighting fit.
Great.
Westy, love your work.
Love your work, mate. Good job. So, of course, if you do want to grab some of the Radix Nutrition, just go to their website and just use Barkerati as the code for a discount on us. And, yeah, enjoy and hope it treats you as well as it's treated in. Righto, boys. Let's just move on. A few things coming up quickly. Sailfest Newcastle starts this week. So 3 days of sailing in Newcastle, inshore, offshore, all sorts of stuff going on. It's a fantastic little venue. Newcastle's a great city, beautiful city actually. And yeah, definitely worth jumping on board for that one. I don't know if you guys are across that. They've got the Cock of the Harbour.
I am across it, and I'll be on a flight on Thursday heading there with the mighty SMB.
Ah, there you go.
So I look forward to being part of, how's this, 11 TPs will be taking part.
Yeah.
Because it is the, of course, the IRC Nationals as well.
Mm.
So 11 TPs, which is that?
It's pretty good.
That's actually pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yep.
Great, cool.
No question.
No question. We did have as an event coming up the Flying Dutchman Worlds, but we didn't publish last week, and it's been and done in St. Petersburg Yacht Club in Florida, which I'll probably go and knock on the door and say good day in about a month's time.
Hate you send your boat to the wrong St. Petersburg. We've played that joke before.
Done that joke. I might, for those who
especially
are members,
a Flying Dutchman,
I think Davies Bay and St. Petersburg, I'm going to come knocking on your doors in early May just to say good day. Congratulations to the Commodore, boat named Commodore, Kai Ludke and Kai Schaefers from Germany. Then the Hungarian team of I give up on that one. I apologise. I've got a great Hungarian mate. He'll kill me when he hears this. Demokas and Machenil. And then the next German team of Phoenix with Koning and Bracken. So congratulations, FDs, still love you. Great to see you out there going for it, and well done. And then the other one, of course, upcoming, we just missed the WASP US champs, but they're in Hawaii, so everyone was a winner from that one. But yeah, just thought I'd quickly publish those. And then in terms of moving forward, we probably should just talk about the Jack Lloyd Listener of the Week brought to us by our friends from Vicobi. Remember, if you do send in the best correspondence with us, you will win $200 for a month. You will win $200 Aussie worth of fabulous Vicobi gear, including their fantastic new trap belts and hiking pants. Right. There you go. Right, okay, shall we go through them, boys?
Yeah.
We shall.
First one, Ian, Tomo Thompson, and the team from J-Bird. So we spoke to Annika and Tomo. Great interview, mm-hmm. A lot of fun. Tomo was sort of alluding to, he couldn't tell us some of the stories, but there has been the announcement with Early Race Week of two big sponsors. One is Ocean Dynamics, which is a private charter company up there. They're providing a great, huge, cool boat, so all the media crew going up there can have a great time. And then Mount Gay Rum is coming on board. Yeah. And so you go to Early, you get the Mount Gay if you win your divisions. The Mount Gay hats are back.
The famous red hats are back.
The caps are back. So enter and you get a cap. And, yeah, big sponsorship for Early. And as this is Easter, as we record this, we're also doing a little plug with the J-Bird team where you can win a crew spot on their team at Early by simply taking a video of a photo or a photo of you doing a rum bunny this Easter, which is where you chew the, chew the ears off a lint bunny and then put a shot of Mount Gay in there. And the winner is the most creative one that will be announced on the Bar Karate podcast Sunday the 14th of April.
So far, one's Board and Gents is having a big crack at it.
I've got the top shelf Black Barrel Mount Gay out.
He's eyeing a ride on the J-Bird.
Oh, I can get a free. Oh, I don't need to win. Oh, it'll be someone else. So we're good with that. But
the J Dog going for a ride on the J Bird, having down to Rum Bunny.
That's my wife's
smashing
nickname.
Some Rum Bunnies.
Smashing some Rum Bunnies, boys. But anyway,
no, but get on that, listeners, because if you are in the area and you want to go for a sale, it'll be a cracking week. TP52, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Good fun.
Here's a great one, Phil Scherer from Commodore. Okay, so the Tauranga Yacht Club will be serving Rum Bunnies at our closing day pirate party on Friday, which has just been. I'm trying 4 different rums in the bunnies to find the best options. The things you do as a Commodore.
And yeah. 4 different types of rums in the bunnies.
He's got 4 bunnies.
Clearly, as a Commodore ship, I had to reach out also back to them and just, mate, how cool. That is commitment to your cause.
Oh,
I
love it. Great. It's absolutely great. The other one that I quite liked, boys, is we got an email from Fabian Haraldson. So this whole conversation we had with the J-Bird, Ocean Crusaders J-Bird team, was pretty freaking good because it sparked a lot of debate. And we got a huge number of people reaching out. But EP2251, this is Fabian. My ears grew when you mentioned Volvo Penta, where I'm working. The segment on how senseless starting the engine to charge batteries, etc., is so true. Doing so wears out the engine prematurely because charging does not put enough load on it. If said engine is also turbocharged, it's even worse. Thanks for a great podcast. Thank you for a great informative email, mate. That was an absolutely cracking email. So very beneficial to our listeners. I didn't know that, boys. I didn't realise it wore the engine out a bit more. So I learned something. You guys are smarter than me.
Well, it's a bit like us, Jordan Spencer. You know, we need the load to perform at our best, you know. And we definitely put ourselves – well, actually, and that includes yourself, your good self, Brett Perry.
Well, we don't
require that load.
We don't like to sit at idle, do we?
Boys, and whilst you're bantering on, we've got Ross Vickers sent us on Instagram the Land Rover's Prayer. Our Land Rover, who art on the side of the road, hallowed be thy name, I've lost it. Hang on, I'll have to replay it.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be
done. No.
On earth as, sorry.
Here we go.
It is Sunday.
Okay. Our Land Rover, who art on the side of the road, hallowed be thy name. Thy AAA come, thy engine replacement be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our extended warranty and forgive us our purchases as we forgive those who hold our purchases against us. And lead us not back to the dealership, but deliver us from the check engine lights. For thine is the luxury of off-roader, the supercharged power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Perfect. For Easter. I just thought you boys would enjoy it.
I like it.
Everyone takes the piss out of your boss. I love it.
I'm just glad I can add to some of the banter that goes back and forth. You know, Crocs, Land Rovers, whatever the case may be.
It's on fire. You're a cultural icon. There will be a statue right next to Slingers.
It's hot time with Bice.
One thing I didn't do there before you start, Bice, is I didn't say who was the best. Did we decide who was the best out of that one? Or they're all fantasy?
Completely missed
They were into the batch anyway, right?
Yeah, they're all in the batch.
Or are we at the end?
It's only the monthly winner that counts, and that'll be announced next week, if I remember.
Love a good rum bunny, though. Love a good rum bunny.
Yeah, there were some great conversations. All right, sorry, bud. You're in charge.
Antigua Super Yacht Cup, at time of last recording, it was mid-regatta. I think I'd just spoken to you blokes about we tipped a friend of the super yachts off the back of the boat out at sea barrier, which I thought was very appropriate.
A unique start to a regatta, Bicey.
There was the odd person on the Maximus that we went out to it that hadn't listened to the podcast. They got onto it and I'd been crapping on about this and like, oh, we heard what you said about Stan and all this stuff. So that was a bit of a, it was kind of cool. It was very cool. Really good. Anyway, cool.
Geez, our listeners, our listener base has gone through the roof after your week on the boat.
Maximus.
46 new podcasters.
Exactly. So.
We've got quite a few from New Zealand Sail GP. I'll give you the strong tip. Anyway, continue on.
There's a couple of boats that have timeless, I'd say.
Yep.
And there's one boat which is absolutely timeless. The Baltic 65 Hatteras, Dykstra design, is phenomenal vessel. Like, no matter which, you know, it's kind of that modern classic look, if that makes any sense. Ketch, they sail extremely well. They've gone out, they've dominated the Caribbean series season. And it's a beautiful boat to see going around the racetrack. I mean, we're talking a 220-odd foot boat, 200-odd ton, getting around the racetrack. They're sailing it like a 50-footer was kind of 20 years ago. So they took out the Antigua Super Yacht Cup as well as St. Bart's. So well done to Hatteras, all the crew on board. They sailed it magnificently. But, you know, one of the cool things with this, and just to explain how the bucket works, it's more that pursuit race type style. So you get a time to start and, you know, to keep all the big boats away from each other, just due to, you know, that severe weld, what's going on out there. Yeah, big, and we're talking big gear. But one of the stats that they took was the closest to your starting time. For example, BP, your skipper of Hatteras, you have to be at the start line at 12:37, 48 seconds. You have to do that. But what they did and is get everyone's average or everyone's delta from each day. And that was an actual prize at the end of St. Bart's. From memory, I think Hanneman, our good mate, Tony Mutter, skipper of the boat, I think they took that away with a stellar crew on board. And I've got to say, big shout out to all the pro yachties in this game, because it's bloody cool. And we're getting these huge things around the track, which is awesome in itself. But, yeah, just going back, Hatteras pretty much did a fantastic effort, took it out. Happy people everywhere. So well done to them.
Very cool. Mm.
Jordan Spencer.
Yeah.
Sail GP.
Oh.
You were there. Oh, boy. You saw it. I'm not sure where to start.
Okay.
I had a few things to talk about. No, let me start, and then maybe you can just actually give some clarity on a few things.
Mm.
Number one,
Sail
GP on the lot, friend of the show.
Oh, yeah. Jody Shields.
Jody and a couple of his good mates.
Yeah. Chris Steele and Anna Wilcox. Yep.
Yep, correct. So how's this? So it must have been like 11 at night. We'd probably just finished putting a batten in a jib or something like that. So I've just
started at four o'clock in the afternoon.
4 p.m.
Didn't drop it overboard. I do that. That's why they never get me to do that, Shane.
So I managed to you know, put the ear pods in, start checking it, just listening in what was going on. And it happened to be day one,
which was
the day of the Dolphins.
The Dolphin day.
But regardless, I managed. This is almost the same as when I dialed into you, Jordan Spencer, when you were calling the World Sailing, when you spoke about the fin going around. You know, sailing the fin going in the finish mark. Jody, he's like, oh, not sure if you've heard about it, but this sailing podcast called Barkerati. And then did we not get the best commentary? I think it was Anna. She was just said, look, guys, we've been crapping on here for about 2 or 3 hours. There's no wind. I really need to go to the toilet. And then the boys had a bet how long she was going to the toilet for.
That's filling time.
Jody took it out, though. He said, hey, mate, I live with enough women. I'll guarantee it's within 3 minutes. And they're like, oh, it's 2:56. Yeah. And blah, blah, blah. And she walks back in. Well, 2:59, I've got it. Jody wins. I've got the best 5 minutes of commentary you could imagine.
I love it.
Shout out.
Just for the listeners, so Sales GP Unlock is you can turn your TV down when you're watching it and turn you can stream that commentary if you want to get more specific sailing commentary. They're not going to talk in kilometres an hour. They're not going to be politically correct. They're not going to hold back. So JD and Chris and Anna are just doing a commentary alongside the broadcast. And don't worry, boys, yep. I asked the technician how we can do it for Barcarati, for other events as well. So there's a bit of technology.
Just some serious good stuff going on there. Yep, so well done, Judge, for kicking that off. That is bloody good stuff. And I was actually having a bit of banter with him at the time over a bit of messenger. Cool. But okay, going back to the actual event itself. All right, talk to Jordan Spencer. You were there for practice day. You were there for Dolphin Day. And then you were there final day. And we saw the Aussies, never seen a root of mark. Well, you have it.
Fully mounting a mark, yeah. What can I say? Practice day was, we saw, I think, GBR in Spain. There was a penalty for GBR for a little touch on Spain. There were so many near misses on that practice day.
We discussed this, didn't we? Yeah. You know, like how this weekend seemed to all come together, bottleneck, with some really, really interesting situations.
Okay, I got a conspiracy theory for you, boys. Dolphin Day. The night before, Cootsie went on their TV and has gone, we're never coming back to Christchurch. And some of these special interest groups have just made it impossible to come here. Like, put the boot in, right? Absolutely put the boot in. Now, the way SailGP works, they've got in Christchurch, is there's a dolphin management plan. It's there's the interested party, because it's a dolphin sanctuary. And then you've got SailGP. So there's an independent person that makes the ruling whether to sail or not. So Russell's put the boot into everyone. And
steam off.
I reckon basically just pissed everyone off because they've just gone, well, you can say whatever you want, but we'll show you who's boss. So that's my conspiracy theory. There was supposedly a dolphin around. I didn't see it, but I wouldn't see it because I was off the water. But that's just a conspiracy theory rumour that I heard floating around. Because, of course, the very next day, hours before even sailing was going to be underway, there was an all clear message sent out hours before sailing saying they were all out of the harbour. It was no stress. So some, obviously somebody went and
captured. Either a shitload of cash changed hands or the Dolphin Society is now moving into a new mega complex.
Anyway, so Russ was not happy. They definitely won't be going back to Christchurch. He's definitely not happy. And, you know, when he cuts something off, it stays cut off. Sunday, holy shitballs. How's the carnage? Every boat's trashed. Like, they're all trashed. The US boat, the British boat, the Canadian boat was basically split almost down that whole starboard hull. They just were bumper boats off everyone.
So what do you put this down to, Jordan?
Phil Robertson couldn't see over the
no, the steering wheel. The actual carnage. Is it because it is the amphitheatre that everyone wants to see and the congestion at that particular mark?
Well, one, or let's be honest.
Or is it, here's another conspiracy for you. Russell's like, fuck, the Dolphins have taken over for one day. We actually need to turn this shit up right now.
Yeah, I don't know. That was
start crashing these boats, turning it into an absolute spectacle. Hey, how often did you go to the races with the old man, right? Yeah. It was cool watching them going round and round. But how much did you watch Demolition Derby? Way more. Oh,
mate, Speedway Park on a Friday night.
Well, I don't know that order went out. Obviously, the Danes lost their bow as well, and there was a lot of carnage, a lot of damage, and of course, the Aussie team there, full crossbeam, took the impact of that mark. So you can see Tom quite clearly steering it as
you can see the decision being made.
Yeah.
On the helm, if you look at it.
Yeah. So you know, they're all just all jokes. Sorry, Phil, I was just having a joke, mate. But in terms of just the whole element of they're all just so desperate to get ahead. One thing that those – I don't understand why those marks are sitting there. Like they're mobile.
Well, this,
like
this, was, this topic came up quite a lot during the week.
Just put them above the reaching angle. Like,
well, I was reading it, and, you know, it's – it in the end, the onus – and Tom explained it beautifully. You know, he knew that he was in trouble.
But why haven't they?
And I think we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, it's going to take an absolute major to change some serious rules here. And luckily, it wasn't a major. And I'm talking about people here. Fortunately, it was only equipment. And that can all be fixed.
But when it was a decision that it was a decision that he made to not basically go through the middle of the Canadian boat.
He might actually have to put one of those think clouds above his head on his statue.
Those finish marks have got – there's no need for them
nothing
to
do with it.
Yeah, they weren't even in their finish position. They're just sitting there.
They were right at the jibe. You know, there was nowhere else for anyone to go.
They could have been further up the course where they come reaching in, they won't be in the way, or they could be down below that bottom mark and then come into the finish. So they're just in the wrong – I don't understand it. But anyway, massive carnage, lots of boat damage. Boats damaged up the yin yang. They've got just over a month, so first week of May in Bermuda. I don't know.
It's only about 3.5 weeks to ship them there. So they should be good. 3 days fixed.
No, they're all gone. They're all gone damaged. So they've all had their skins pulled off. And so because they're an aluminium honeycomb, you can't leave any water in them. So all the damaged bits have all had. But the Canadian, that whole starboard hull is basically toast. If you can't tell me that's not toast. It's like right through the structural foil element where all that loading goes. So that side's toast. The good 8 foot of the US boat's toast, you know, like there's a lot of toast.
And you know what I've always said, BP, nothing worse than some aluminium toast. She's no good. You put some aluminium in the toaster, she's no
good. A bit of Vegemite should be fine.
You know when you put metal in your mouth, that feeling?
But how about the winners, Jordan? Talk to us about the winners. The winners and the grinners.
Yeah, well, I mean, New Zealand were just fast. It's really evident. Australia and New Zealand and France are really hitting their straps most of the time. You know, the Danes are onto it. But when you actually look at some of the data, it's the accuracy of coming through their manoeuvres. So they're able to come out of their manoeuvres higher foiling, or, you know, when you look at the data, which I was able to do, there might be more variance from some of the teams at the height they come off out of attack. You know, how far they've dropped down on their foil versus, you know, the others. And it's the leading top teams, you know, New Zealand, Australia, the teams are at the front, way more accurate on their execution. And it's all about the teamwork, 100% about the teamwork. And because it's so hard to do, you know, like one mistake, one little change throws everything. But
Well, the teamwork's the dream work.
Makes the dream work. That's it. The Kiwis are on fire. They're probably going to win this year, which I think I tipped at the start of the year. So, you know, a couple of $1 million rolling my way.
Well, actually, win the points or the mill?
The whole thing at the end. We'll see. The Aussies are...
All right.
Yeah, well, it depends who gets the boat. Yeah.
So, well, we've got a few weeks up our sleeve to totally analyse what's going to happen coming into the final couple of the year. But
four more now, boys.
You know, one of our favorite classes, of course, on the show is the Etchells. And there's two magnificent things to talk about. Yeah. One is the winner of the worlds, the Magpie, with GT James Mayo and of course Rich Allison, friend of the show, who took it out very nicely. So well done to them. They could have lost it on the last day if it was a complete cock-up, but it wasn't. And they went out, won it convincingly. GT's been at it for many years. And so a big shout-out to them, big shout-out to everyone, actually, who competed in Perth.
Come on.
Now, the more controversial side of it, of course, is the Mole 11s, which I've been quite vocal in, actually, and not being as serious as some people may think. But what I have seen come through, and maybe I've missed this earlier, but apparently, and taking nothing away, absolutely nothing away from GT and the team, the word was the Model 11 mods that were going to be done and that have been done, and then there was going to be an assessment at this Worlds as to whether the Model 11 with the mods would continue on.
Correct.
That has now been extended.
Correct.
Extended to Melbourne.
To the Melbourne Worlds. In the meantime, though, what they're going to do is do a replication of the testing that took place initially to define what the mods were, to the what were the Model 11s to now the current boats, which was a bunch of tow tests and a whole, you know, plethora of different things. So that'll be taking place over the next however long. It's quite public.
Another couple of years.
Just check it out. But basically that whole Model 11 thing, as to whether they'll be accepted, I don't know if this is good or bad or indifferent, to tell the honest truth. But, you know, it'll go through to Melbourne Worlds. So stand by.
Obviously, you know, there was a fair bit of insight into the event, and a very cool results, obviously, with all that were there. But one thing that stood out, and this was the words from my ex-team, Great White Hunter, who is a Mold 11, the professionalism of GT, James and Richie, with Ian coaching, and he reckons they were doing, you know, ice baths and focusing and training, and it was a next level. You know, not one single thing was left aside. And that was a really interesting...
That's actually why I've got an issue with the whole fucking thing, to tell you the honest truth. It's an etchel. You sit on the side. Who cares? Buy a 10 grand boat. Go for a yacht. Get in the top five at the world's, top 10 at the world's. This is my thing about it all. Yep. Got way too professional. No, and again, take nothing away from the guys, because GT, we're going to get him on the show. And he's going to tell us all about it. He's going to tell us about his ice baths and drinking schooners out of the ice bath. I'm
just joking. I tell you, boys, on Dolphin Day at SailGP, like, one of my roles at SailGP has me listening in during the racing. I can listen in to any of the teams and their coaches, and I can, you know, do that. And I can say on Dolphin Day, there was an awful lot of banter going on around the race course, banter on discussions on the boats, and I could switch between whatever boat, and I just happened to catch a few conversations where the actual Worlds was being discussed and some pretty strong views on that. But I won't say who or what, because I don't want to burn anyone. But, the Etchels were being discussed at the SailGP in Christchurch, yes. Who won? Oh, no. I don't know what. So what happens in response here? Okay.
No. But again, well done to everyone that took part in the Worlds. And I must admit, I was a bit blown away in the conditions that they got. They got wind, they got no wind, they got shifty, they got a whole bunch of different things. Our good friends in Doosan, Snowed and Mitten. Sailed out of their skin, super unlucky, probably won the jib for the mid-fleet. But sorry, that's not derogatory at all. But they were unlucky in that, coming into the last couple of races, and had a UFD, I believe,
there was a lot of that. There was a lot of it. A
lot of that going on. That's Etchels. That's cool. Carrying on. Next, boys. Brisbane Glasson just finished.
Oh, yeah.
All boats across the line. Wild Thing 80 or 100 or whatever it is. 80-foot rig for a 100-foot of boat.
Yep.
Best paint job, according to Tony Mutter, on the water. Kind of tend to agree. Took out line on us. Looks like Celestia are the winner on IRC.
Yep.
Just ahead of Alive.
Correct.
I believe.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was listening into your commentary, Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe you call them catamarans. Oh, but multi-holes.
Multi-holes, yeah.
Were you told to say that?
Oh, it's a multi-hole race, so I just realized. No one tells. Big Grant, who organises the whole thing, he's pretty laid back guy, yeah. And he wants it to be fun. He wants everyone to enjoy the broadcast, not be super serious. So he's a good man. And yeah, Tempo was third. Alive was 20 minutes, I think, behind the Wild Thing across the line. So
not bad.
Going well. I tell you who had a shocker though was one Sporden Jenser. His weather forecast. Coming in, so confident, 15 to 20 knots southwest. It hasn't been anything but that. And then this just cell just sat over the
start. You got so defensive during that commentary on how you absolutely cocked up the weather.
I did.
You should have just owned it.
I did. And then it went east, and then it, like, you know, it was just awful forecast. And then later on, like, it was just literally 6 hours later, then she's exactly what was predicted. But, yeah, no, completely
right in the eye of it.
Yeah, and then, anyway. But
nah, great we won't hold it against you.
Listen in, Jay. Yourself, Grant, and Nick did a fantastic job. Well done. Actually what more events need. Well done to Grant for actually getting the sponsorship that was required to get this to the level of this. Yeah. And it's just a good example that that's something that can happen in this world.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's good. It's good, 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 good. It's great. Keep the event building, you know, it's good fun. It's great fun. Great fun doing the commentary. Cool.
Yep. Good. Did you have any rum buddies?
No, I had a few beers. I did have a few beers, but it was in the morning, so the night before. But
when's that ever stopped?
Yeah, fair enough.
No, she's good. Yeah. It was all good. Anything else, Bryce, you want to touch on?
No, that's funny, mate. Okay. All good.
Just a quick mention that the International 1 meter Australian Champs just happened here in Oz. Congrats to Sean Wallace, then Paul Jones and Greg Torpy, who was racing Brisbane and Gladstone. He was on the 100.
Just a busy man.
Young Alex Scapins from Adelaide. We were given a tip ahead of the 1 meters just from Pete Shuer. Just keep your eye out for young Alex Scapins, and he got it done, so into the fourth. The reason I'm mentioning... the reason I'm mentioning it is the World Champs are in Gladstone and will be in October, late October, 20 to 28th in beautiful Gladstone. Really good venue for doing a bit of 1 meter racing, and a full live stream for the whole thing. We'll be going with full commentary team and
So have you got a gig for this one?
100%. Yeah. So doing that.
Nice. You and Grant.
And Grant, Grant's baby, he's doing a lot of work. Yeah. But, so if you're into it, into twiddling with your fingers, here's your chance because it'll be good fun.
I can't wait to hear the commentary. I think it's going to be top-notch.
It'll be good fun. It'll be really good fun. And, like, I mean, we're going to – I'm thinking of just, you know, because I swear we're going to get a punch on at some stage, you know, at a world. You have to, don't you, in a twiddler event.
I think you should be there sort of niggling on a bit.
No, I think the commentary should be live, and you could definitely niggle it on. Did you hear what Jacko said about Benno?
accidentally leave the microphone on.
Cool.
Nice. Right,
big week.
Big week, boys.
Massive guest next week, of course, and it just continues. Thanks to everyone for listening in. It's been a ton of fun, boys. And
awesome.
Bosh, how long we got you home for?
I got Newcastle Thursday for the IRC match. So
playing Monday. Yeah, we'll have to work that one out. Okay, cool. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, write to us at cheers@barkerati.com and also Radix Nutrition website, and use Barkerati as the code to get yourself a discount.
Nice work.
Whoa.
Sing it slow.